Some of you may follow the evening news, maybe in the newspaper or on news feeds. But we listen to the news because it shows us the world that we live in, and we want to see what events are happening around us. And we want to stay in touch with these events. People die in car accidents. We hear about attacks in Europe. Little boys drowning in local pools. These are sad events that we deal with as people and as a community. And after a while, sometimes we get a bit tired of hearing about it. We comment to our coworkers that it's sad, or we shake our heads because we don't really know what to say or how to meaningfully react. And after a while, as we tire of it, it's easy to become less compassionate towards other people. Our heart goes out towards other people who are being affected by these events. This morning, we're going to look at a story. We're going to continue in Luke chapter 7. We're going to be looking at verses 11 and following. And it's a story where Jesus acts with compassion towards a lady who is in a very bad situation. The story has several threads that run through it that are common to the book of Luke and to other passages in the scriptures. And so we're also going to tie it together with some of those others. As I read the story, I'd like you to notice what details are included in the story. And then maybe if there's some information that you think is missing that maybe you would have expected would be there, kind of take note of those things in your mind. So we're going to read Luke chapter 7. And we're going to start at verse 11. Luke chapter 7, we'll start at verse 11. Jesus raises a widow's son. Soon afterward, he went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a great crowd went with him. As he drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother. She was a widow, and a considerable crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then he came up, he touched the bier, which is like a stretcher that they carried the dead person on. The bearer stood still, and he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." The dead man sat up, began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has arisen among us, and God has visited his people." And this report about him spread through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding country. In the book of Luke, Jesus brings the gospel to people in a very personal manner. And in this miracle, Jesus extends himself into a woman's desperate situation. She's introduced to us as part of a crowd who's going to bury her only son. Luke also reports that she's a widow. In Israel, every woman wanted a son. Having a son meant there was a future. The family line would continue. They would be taken care of when they're older. But not for this widow. She has lived through grief once before when her husband died. But as life went on, her son could still provide for her, could still provide food, a place to live, protection. Her societal needs were still met because she had a son. But this time it's different. Now her last protector and provider is gone, and she would have to depend on the goodness of other people, hoping they obey the laws that were there in place to take care of widows and people who didn't have protection. There were Jewish laws, such as people, harvesters, leaving wheat at the edges of their fields so that widows and people who didn't have could come and they could take the grain and make flour and still have food to eat. This time, she's grieving her son. There's no one left to provide for her basic needs, food, shelter, and her future is more hopeless and much more desperate. We see through this story and through a few other examples that I'm going to mention here in a minute that Jesus brings the scope of the gospel reaches the whole person and the whole of society. It extends everywhere. Because of the gospel, Jesus takes care of our spiritual needs. He also takes care of our physical needs. He takes care of the needs of the poor. He takes care of the needs of the rich, all of society and the whole person. In Luke, this lady isn't the only parent in the book of Luke who's concerned about their only child. I found this pretty interesting, actually. When Jairus asks Jesus to heal his daughter, it says he implored him, he begged him to come to his house because he had an only daughter. In Luke chapter 9, a man comes to Jesus. He says, "Teacher, come look at my son, for he's an only child." Jesus heals him of an unclean spirit. And there's something important in this detail of being an only child. In the Old Testament, there are several instances where the prophets use mourning for an only child as a metaphor for very deep, sorrowful mourning. In Zechariah chapter 12, it's the most sorrowful mourning in the Jewish culture. In Zechariah chapter 12, verse 10, mourning over the firstborn is shown as a depth of mourning, of anguish and torment. He says, "I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and pleas for mercy, so that when they look on me, on him whom they have pierced, they shall mourn for him as one mourns for an only child and weeps bitterly over him as one weeps over a firstborn." In Jeremiah writes something similar. "O daughter of my people, put on sackcloth and roll in ashes. Make mourning as for an only son. Most bitter lamentation, for suddenly the destroyer will come upon us." This is a very sorrowful and grievous situation this lady is in. And it's into this grief and this hopelessness that Jesus brings the gospel to change her situation. Jesus intervening in people's lives, once again, this is common through the book of Luke. We've seen a couple of instances where this has happened. He intervenes for Zechariah and Elizabeth, a priest and his wife who have no child. This is in chapter 1. God reaches into their hopelessness and gives them a son who has a special role in redemptive history. In chapter 5, Jesus sees some fishermen who have worked all night, and now they're cleaning their nets. They're not getting paid that day because they didn't catch anything, and Jesus intervenes, speaks into their toil, says, "Try again." He gives them a large catch of fish, and then speaks to them a greater purpose and destiny. "Do not be afraid. You will catch men from now on." Here in chapter 7, he speaks to the widow. The thread continues. There are a few other instances that happen. And then in chapter 23, Jesus, as he's dying on the cross, brings life to a dying criminal and brings and promises him paradise. A little bit later, chapter 24, after Jesus' resurrection, Jesus meets two people on their way to Emmaus. And in their grief and their confusion, because they don't know what's going on, Jesus has died. They thought he was the one they should have hope in. And Jesus speaks into their confusion and he opens the scriptures and gives them clarity and a renewed fervor and hope to see through what seemed to be lost. So in these passages, Christ brings gospel change to a variety of people, and he brings them from where they are to a place beyond the situation that's surrounding them. He brings them through it and beyond it. And God still does this today. He gives the miracle of new life for our children. He still provides for our daily needs. He puts food on our tables. He still gives counsel through the scriptures. And he still brings clarity into our confusion. God remains the same because he still moves with compassion. And Luke wants us to see this. "When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, 'Do not weep.'" This is the tenderness of Christ that we see here. David tells us in Psalms, in a few different places, "You, O Lord, are a compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness." The Lord is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. The Lord is good to all, and his mercy is over all that he has made. Take a minute and think about your experiences of God's compassion. Maybe you can remember a time when God moved in your life and he brought you from a place that seemed very desperate and he brought you beyond that circumstance. Do you look back on those examples and see it as God's care, and you think to yourself, God has visited me, like the crowds in our story say. I encourage you this morning to find a way to document or to remember the ways that God has moved with compassion towards you. I once knew a young family. They were living day to day while the husband was attending college. His wife was at home with their child. And one stressful evening, they made a faith decision, and they decided to trust God with everything. They began writing down all of the ways that God provided for them. They put the list on their fridge. It was an Ebenezer of sorts, a way of remembering. Ebenezer is an older word. It's a word that's used in Scripture of the Israelites making piles of rocks and making mementos and memorable things that people could see of what God has done. When someone gave these people a meal, they wrote it down. When someone gave them a word of encouragement, they wrote it down. Money, clothing, babysitting, nothing was taken for granted, and they sought to write these things down so that they would remember God's relationship to their needs and how he has provided for those needs. Page after page, and the list was a reminder to them of a compassionate God who cares for them. I also know another family. They have a big jar, like one of those ones you used to be able to buy mayonnaise in, I think. And when something happened and they saw God's faithfulness to their family, they put something in the jar that would remind them of that instance. And they kept it in their living room, where they would always see it as they walked through their house. It wasn't hidden away under the stairs in the trunk, where it wouldn't be a reminder to them. It was kept out in the open, where they would always see it. How do you respond to his presence in your journey? As he provides for you and as he has compassion on you. Remembering what God has done for you will allow you to know him in a very personal way. The Israelites knew God through the actions he performed. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. That's how the Ten Commandments starts out. He had them build these piles of rocks, these Ebenezers, where he performed miracles, where he had them walk through on dry land, and he would gather these rocks and so that their children would see these piles of rocks and say, why are these rocks here? And the parents could tell them of what God had done. Several years ago, Elizabeth and I, we were hiking on a trail called the Berg Lake Trail. It's by Mount Robson. Starts at the highway, goes up, kind of wraps around the backside of Mount Robson. It's a very beautiful hike. And as we got up around the back, there's a part where Mount Robson's up on the right, and then there's a kind of a wide valley, and it's just kind of filled with rocks, and you walk along this valley for a little ways. I shouldn't say it's a valley. There's a very tall mountain over there and mountains over there. It's not really a valley, but there's tall things there. We hiked up on a hot, sunny day. And as we were walking along the trail, Elizabeth noticed that there are these piles of rocks every so often, and the trail followed those rocks, and she thought, why are these piles here? It didn't really seem to make any sense. We could see the trail just fine. 2 days later, when we were coming back, that night it had rained. I don't remember it being a heavy rain, but it was just steady. But all the water's coming down, and it was coming down this rock valley that in reality was a very large creek bed when water comes there. And we had to follow these piles of rocks. And I remember as we got near the end of it and we had to go into the trees once again, we missed it. We lost the path just a little ways and we had to backtrack. But the reason the rock piles were there was so that people knew the path when the weather was bad. We don't always need the guidance when everything is good. It's easy to remember. It's easy to see the path. But when things get hard or things change in our lives, all of a sudden we need those markers to remind us of what God has done and who he is. And it reminds us what he will continue to do. Find a way to remember how God has intervened in your life, and your trust in him will grow. So the gospel reaches all of society and the whole person. The next little part Second lesson that we learn from the widow's story is that Jesus intervenes in the land in between. This, in a way, is kind of a present tense version of what we were just talking about. We were just talking about remembering what God has done, how he has helped, how he has shown compassion. But right now, some of us may be in situations where we need that compassion and we're waiting for it. We're between the death and the miracle where this woman is. And she doesn't know where the resolution's going to come from. The disciples don't know, the crowds don't know, but she's in this in-between. And the reason we need to remembering what he's done in the past helps us remember now, because some things don't seem to get easier. It seems like it's hard every time we're in that in-between. And trusting him is just as hard as it was last time, and you need Jesus to come and visit you in this land in-between, between the death and the miracle. I think most of us would say we want to live on the other side of the miracle, after it's already happened. We don't want to be in this in-between place. We want to be where it's all resolved. But that's not the world we live in. We live in the midst of the hurt and the tragedy. We want to be on the other side where we're able to tell of his glory and speak of his might, as the psalmist puts it in one spot. There are examples in the Bible of being in the land in between. This is kind of another example of a thread that runs through. This one goes through all of Scripture. The Israelites were between slavery and the promised land for 40 years. David was in between being anointed king and being crowned king for a number of years. Mary, Joseph, and Jesus were in between when they had to go to Egypt to escape Herod's killing spree. Abraham was in between when he was traveling to the land that God would show him. He didn't know where the land was. He was just told to walk. He was also in between the promise of descendants and the birth of a son. He was in between. He didn't know when the resolution was going to be there. Interestingly, for some of them, this land in between brought periods of doubt to them at some point. The Israelites doubted God a number of times, and as a result, all the adults had to die. David was in despair. Read a few of the Psalms, and you will find very quickly that he wasn't very happy in some of those times. And you might be in the same place where in this in-between, there's doubt, there's confusion, there's anger, there's loneliness. And all of those things seem to happen every day as you tried to wade through this. But you don't know where the peace is going to come from. But Jesus knows. The widow did not know in her situation. The crowds didn't know. The crowd with Jesus didn't know. The disciples didn't know. Nobody knew, but Jesus knew. Have you ever read a story or watched a movie where one of the characters commits a faux pas? He does something that he wasn't supposed to do. And it makes you gasp or wonder, why did they do that? Did they really do that? In our story, this is kind of what Jesus does. Get ready to gasp. The Lord saw her. He had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." Who in their right minds tells someone at a funeral who is going through the most sorrowful situation that you can in your culture and says to you, "Do not weep"? If there's security at this procession, they need to get him out of there because he's not really in touch with what's going on here. This is a terrible situation, and there is seemingly nothing that can help her. But these are the words of truest comfort from the only one who can actually change the situation. And change it he does. "Young man, I say to you, arise." Words of power from the only one who can raise the dead. The dead man sat up, began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. "Go be with your mom. She needs you." In the story in chapter 9 where Jesus heals the boy of the unclean spirit, in 9 verse 42, interestingly, it says that Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and
gave him back to his father. Be with your father. He loves you. This morning, I want to offer you hope. Hope that Jesus will enter with you in this land in between, and that he will bring personal gospel change into your situation and into your life. Hope that he will lift you beyond your situation, and that he'll take you beyond where you think he can go, because it's a miracle that only he can do. And hope that he'll comfort you like only he can, and that he will speak words of power and comfort to change your situation. A little aside, it's interesting to observe that when Jesus raises the dead as a person is, it's a very personal act. He addresses the young man specifically. Young man, I say to you, arise. When he raises Jairus' daughter, he says, child, arise. He speaks to her directly. When he calls Lazarus out of the tomb, he says, Lazarus, come out. It's a very personal act. And when Jesus speaks words of comfort and power to you and to your situation, they are personal words to you. It's a direct, conscious, specific word to the listener. The crowds could do nothing that would make a tangible difference to this woman's situation. They can be in the funeral parade. They can wail loudly. They can cry. They can make noise, as is the custom back then. They could play their flutes, which was also the custom. But they could do nothing to really change her situation. For you and I, the biggest way that we can bring about change in an impossible situation for someone else is to pray for them and ask God, the difference maker, to intervene. Henry Nguyen says that prayer is the beat of a compassionate heart. And when we approach God on behalf of someone else and their situation, I think there's essentially two prayers. It boils down to the first being, God, please do what only you can do. And the second is, God, what would you have me do? Because in the situations, there are things that only God can do. God is the only one who could change this widow's situation. God is the only one who can miraculously intervene and supernaturally change the course of events. So that's Jesus intervenes in the land in between. Two observations before we move on to the story a little bit more. Our scripture tells us that Jesus left Capernaum. When he healed the centurion's servant, that happened in Capernaum. This happens in the town of Nain. My Bible says soon afterwards he went to a town called Nain. Some of your Bibles may say the next day. So either way, it's very closely related in time. The first thing I'll say is about Nain, and then the second thing is about Jewish funerals. Nain is about 30 kilometers south of Capernaum. Capernaum's kind of on the north side of the Sea of Galilee. To come to Nain, you would go down a very big road called the Great Trunk Road. It'd be like one of the highways of the day. And then Nain was just a couple kilometers off of that road. Nazareth was about 10 kilometers from Nain on the other side of the Great Trunk Road. Just to give it a little bit of perspective there, Nazareth was where Jesus was rejected earlier in the book of Luke. Nain's a small town. There's no particular reason to go there. It was a good day's walk. It was about 30 kilometers from Capernaum to Nain. And Jesus would have had to have left quite early in the morning in order to be at this funeral procession. And the reason he would have had to leave early in the morning is the second thing about Jewish funerals. There were processions where there was always loud crying. Some people did it professionally. The louder the crier, the more professional you were. They always had instruments, and it was almost like a lot of discord happening in this parade because there's no hope there. The family walked in front of the bier, which is the stretcher that carries the dead person, and then the townspeople would walk behind. Cemeteries were outside the city because Jews couldn't touch graves. They didn't want to become ceremonially unclean because they touched something related to a dead person. If they did, then they got to go through a lengthy cleansing ritual, which is outlined in Numbers. What's significant is that the Jewish customs did not permit leaving dead bodies out overnight. That means the sun died that day. So when Jesus starts early in the morning, the boy is probably alive. He's probably dying as Jesus is walking. He probably dies along the way because it's going to take Jesus and a crowd time to walk this 30 kilometers. I think this is a significant implication for you and I. And the reason I think this is because Jesus is on the way before there's a tragedy. In his power and in his sovereignty, he was in full control of when he arrived at Nain to interrupt this funeral procession outside the town before they get to the cemetery so that he could see the woman walking in front and the townspeople behind. Jesus was on his way before there was a need for a miracle, and he was on his way before the woman even knows there's going to be a need for a miracle. That, to me, was pretty awesome. Because when you and I are in the land in between, and we don't know what's going to happen, Jesus is on his way there. And I think that's pretty significant. God doesn't play catch-up. He's not surprised by our needs. But in compassion, he sees them. And even though we may not see it, our friends may not see that God is moving, he is moving. A second thing about this miracle, and it's a question that sometimes comes up with miracles, and that is in this one, what role does faith play? Faith isn't mentioned in our story. It's easy to recall miracles where faith is mentioned, where Jesus says something like, your faith has made you well. Or just in the paragraphs right in front of this, Jesus says about the centurion, not even in Israel have I found such faith. But in this story, faith is not mentioned or even hinted at. One motivation is given for Jesus' actions in this story. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her. His heart went out to her, would be another way of translating that. Jesus saw a woman who has just lost her only son, and he sees the depth and the consequence of this sorrow and this loss. She needs her son because she loved him, but also because her future care relied on him, and his heart went out to her. Faith has nothing to do with this miracle. Jesus didn't raise him up because they believed he was the Messiah. His heart went out to her. This is also good news, because if God intervened in our lives only in ways that were equivalent to our faith, we would be in big trouble. Because it's at times when our faith is low that we need God to act. So at the end of our story, people's reactions are mentioned. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, saying, a great prophet has arisen among us, and God has visited his people. They were filled with holy terror because they knew that God was there. Because only God can raise the dead. And he's holy, and they were not. And they were filled with fear. God has visited his people. God has arrived here. He's come to help his people. And when people say this, they get it right. This was a familiar phrase to them, by the way. It's used several times in the Old Testament. One example is in Ruth chapter 1. Ruth arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. In Luke, earlier in chapter 1, as Zechariah, when he says his song, at the beginning he says, blessed be the Lord God of Israel, for he has visited and redeemed his people. Before Jesus, there hasn't been any prophets, no word from God, no miracles for 400 years. And now all of a sudden Jesus is doing these things and the dead are being raised and they're recognizing that God is there. That is, they're eager for God to bring righteousness to fix their world, that they that he would visit them. And this is something we still want today. We want God to fix the world, to show his righteousness in the world, that his kingdom would come. God has visited his people. The report that God was in their midst spread everywhere, and that a man had been raised by the power of Jesus. They were right to say that God was visiting them. The problem was they didn't fully get it. Here's why I think that. In Luke chapter 19, a little ways from now, there's a paragraph, Jesus looks at Jerusalem and he weeps over Jerusalem. And he says a few things, and then he says, he foretells the destruction of Jerusalem, which happens a number of years later. But in chapter 19, verse 44, he says, they will not leave one stone upon another in you because you did not know the time of your visitation. They knew that God visited them, but they didn't recognize that Jesus was God. I think they stopped at what said before it, that a prophet has arisen among them, that a prophet through God was raising the dead. And they would have been thinking of Elijah and Elisha probably. In the Old Testament, Elijah was kind of the greatest prophet. He raised the widow's son from the dead in 1 Kings chapter 17. Elijah also delivers that son to his mother, as it's written, which is kind of interesting. We won't read the story, but we know that it wasn't actually Elijah who raised the dead. Elijah, he takes the boy, brings the boy up to his room in the upstairs, lays him on the bed, stretches himself out over the boy three times and prays, and God raises the son. Elijah doesn't raise the son, God does. Elisha, after Elijah, he also raises the son from the dead, and he does kind of the same thing. Stretches himself on the boy, and it says, he stretched himself out on the boy, mouth to mouth, eye to eye, and the warmth, his body became warm again. But again, it's not Elisha raising the dead. It's God raising the dead. But Jesus is more than a prophet, and I think these people didn't recognize that. That yes, God has visited his people, but God is actually right there with you. Not a prophet doing miracles through God. Or God doing miracles through a prophet, I guess it would be. And missing that connection to them brings their destruction. It's easy to say it's too bad. But I think that sometimes we miss what God does for us as well. So we've unpackaged the story. We've seen that God brings the gospel to the whole person and the whole society. He visits us in the land in between, where we're between the tragedy and the miracle, and we don't know what the resolution will be. And we see that God speaks words of comfort and words of power into these situations. And so this morning, I hope that you feel hope for your situation and the things that happen around you. And that when your heart goes out towards someone else, it's God working in you to affect somebody else's situation. And it's good. It's good to be compassionate to other people. Bless you.
Thank you so much, Warren. That was such an encouraging message.